Hi everyone, welcome to the Bootstrap MBA. I'm Jacob Greenfeld, and in this show I document my journey towards an independent MBA-type education that is focused on building bootstrap businesses. Over the course of the next 12 months, I will try to learn everything I can about ideation, software development, and marketing. And I will apply what I've learned by launching a new product each month. Thanks for joining me. Welcome back. So a few weeks have passed since the last episode, and so it's time for another update on my Bootstrap MBA experiment. I just emerged from a really deep rabbit hole. What I tried to find out is what kind of answers are there out there for the question, how do I find promising product ideas, right? Because this is one of the cornerstones I want to focus on. I want to learn marketing, I want to learn how to develop a product, but also maybe first and foremost, I want to understand how to find opportunities, how do I find out what kind of thing I should build. And this is really, yeah, maybe step zero, right? Because before you can apply your building skills and your marketing skills, you have to have something that you can sell. And so I think ideation is really, really crucial. And I thought about it a while, and maybe this is exactly what distinguishes, and let's say, a developer from an entrepreneur, right? Because there are like millions of people who can develop software, but not all of them are good entrepreneurs. And yeah, it's this kind of entrepreneurial mindset, which relies on spotting opportunities where you can provide value and get paid as a result. And I really read everything I found on the topic. So there are so many essays and even books written on the question how to find promising product ideas. And I really read everything I could. And there's so much conflicting information. And for the most part, I was totally confused because a super famous person A says that, and another person says, ha, that's nonsense, you have to do this. And then yet another person chimes in and says, no, all nonsense, you have to try my method, right? And so it continues, it comes full circle, it starts again, and everyone's saying something different. And yeah, you really start questioning who you can trust on this kind of issue, because I think, for example, if you have just an entrepreneur who started one successful company, it can just be luck, right? So there is not necessarily a lot of skill involved. Some people win the lottery, right? So yeah. Anyway, I try to dig my way through this conflicting pile of information, and slowly but steadily, then kind of an image emerged, and what I now call the grand unified sea of product ideation is what I ended up with. And this is really just how I now think about the whole topic now that I've read, let's say, everything. And there's really just one thing that almost everyone, or maybe everyone who's credible, agrees on. And this is that you should focus on problems and not on ideas. And everyone feels the need to point this out because it's maybe the biggest beginner mistake to just do something cool, right? You have an idea and you're thinking, hey, it would be really, really cool to build this. And then you build it and you find out nobody wants it. This is the story of lots of failed entrepreneurs, and you have much bigger success chances if you're actually solving a problem that people really have in the world. So if you're building a solution, people will be happily pay money for it. But of course, I even started to question this a little bit, because if you're clever enough, you can reformulate any idea in terms of a problem, right? And it can be really a totally stupid idea, like, I want to create a social network for pets, for pet owners, whatever. And yeah, sure, you can easily find, or you can come up with some kind of problem that this product is solving. It's great for pets to connect with other pets, to not get lonely, I don't know, all these kind of stuff. And it's not that easy to distinguish between ideas and problems, because every idea can be reformulated in terms of a problem. Anyway, I think the advice is solid, that it makes a lot of sense to focus on problems, especially if you're really looking for painful problems. Yeah. And there's maybe the best advice I found on distinguishing between neat ideas that maybe can be reformulated in terms of a problem and really painful problems is that people have already tried to solve the painful problem. So there currently exists some kind of workaround, or people are doing something to solve the problem, but they're not very happy about their solution, about the solution they are using. In contrast, so with these neat ideas, it's stuff where people, if you ask them, they typically say, yeah, that's cool. But if you mentioned a problem, they maybe even say that, yeah, that's a problem I'm having. But then if you ask, what have you already done or tried to solve it, and they say nothing, then, well, chances are high that they will not buy your product if you finally have it finished, right? So this is just a little piece of advice that I think makes a lot of sense, to have a look at workarounds, to have a look at awkward solutions, and to focus on problems. But yeah, then still the problem remains how to find problems worth solving. And this is where most of the confusion and disagreements begin, because, as I mentioned, most of the, let's say, startup thinkers agree that you should focus on problems over ideas. But how you actually should look out for ideas and problems to solve is, yeah, there's no agreement on this issue. And yeah, I then try to organize all the different ideas. And this is, as I mentioned, what I call a grand unified theory of product ideation. And it's like a two-dimensional grid or coordinate system, if you want, where you have one axis that ranges from inorganic to organic, and another axis that ranges from bottom up to top down. These are just terms that other people have come up with, but not in a unified context, let's say, and also not in a systematic way. So I adopted them and put them together. And now let's talk about these notions. Organic idea is in the solution to a problem that you noticed in your own life, or noticed months or years ago, but it's something that you experienced yourself. In this sense, it's organic. You came up with it by noticing something in your own life. And in contrast, inorganic ideas are always related to other people's problems. So this is one distinction. Well, because you can, when you're focusing on problems, you can either solve your own problems or other people's problems. So this is maybe another way to put it. And then there's the second axis, which ranges from top down to bottom up. And here, when you're starting just with a category in mind, let's say machine learning or Internet of Things, then you're definitely doing a top-down approach. So you're starting with some category, machine learning, and then you start to look for problems in the field, then you're doing top-down. In contrast, if you're starting from a specific problem, not a category, just a specific problem, and this is your starting point, then your ideation method is bottom-up, as I call it. And so in total, we end up with four distinct types of ideation methods, namely, well, bottom-up organic, bottom-up top-down. No, I'm confused, sorry. It's organic bottom-up ideation, organic top-down ideation, inorganic bottom-up ideation, and inorganic top-up ideation. So just a 2 × 2 = 4 possibilities. And yeah, probably the best way to figure this out or to understand what I'm trying to say here is to have a look at my article that I published on my site, and it's titled The Grand Unified Theory of Product Ideation, and I've created a little diagram I'm proud of. So if you're listening to this and you're wondering what the heck is he talking about, then have a look at the diagram and it probably all will make sense. So anyway, really quickly, I want to explain what I mean by these different product ideation categories. Namely, the first one was organic bottom-up ideation, and this is commonly described by saying, yeah, scratch your own itch. And it's all about solving problems that you currently have yourself or had in the past. So, and this is, for example, a method that is recommended by Peter Levels and Tyler Dringers. So Peter Levels in his book Make talks about it, and Tyler Dringers has a guide on building micro assets, as he calls it. And this is one of the things that they recommend people should start with. Look at your own life, look at specific problems in your own life, and then try to build solutions, and people will pay you for it. The next thing is then also organic, but now top-down. And a nice way to frame this is what Paul Graham did. Namely, what he wrote is, you have to live in the future and then build what's missing. So here the idea is that you pick some field, like I said, machine learning, and then you immerse yourself in it, and you're try to learn everything you can about the field until you get to the edge of it and try and then start noticing it, the problems that exist within the space. So in contrast to the bottom-up ideation mentioned previously, so here you're not starting with specific problems, but just with a category, and then you start hunting for problems. So in this sense, this is a distinction between bottom-up and top-down. But both methods are organic because you're looking at problems that you noticed that you have yourself. And just as an example, if you're doing organic top-down ideation, then a good way to do this, for example, would be to start working at a company that does machine learning stuff. And because then you will quickly notice what kind of issues a startup or a company in the field is having, and this will give you plenty of ideas for problems you could solve with your own products. Now, the remaining two methods are inorganic methods. And as I mentioned before, inorganic means that we are now focusing on other people's problems. And as before, let's start by talking about bottom-up ideation. So inorganic bottom-up ideation is known as idea extraction. And what this means is basically just that you try to find people's problems by talking to them. So this is, for example, what Rob Walling recommends in his book, Start Small. And he writes that you should make a list of all the industries you have some association with, and then make another list with all the people you know in these niches, in these fields, and then just give them a call, ask them what is painful about your job, what could work better, what is frustrating, and so on. And yeah, this this sounds great because you just ask people for what the problem is, and they hand them to you on a silver plate, and you just solve them, and they give you money, and everyone wins, right? It sounds too good to be true, and I think it is, because this is idea extraction is, I think, really, really hard to do, right? And it's for the problem I mentioned earlier already with, yeah, if just talking to people, there are a lot of things that can go wrong. Like, as I mentioned, if you're asking someone, hey, is it a problem for you that your dog is not connecting enough with other dogs or whatever, then maybe some of the people will say yes, but if you then have a product for them, they will not really use it because it's not really a painful problem. And there's a great story that illustrates this about an anthropologist who went to Africa to study the life of teenage girls there. And she went to the villages, talked to dozens of girls, and then wrote some big study. And a few years afterwards, other researchers visited the same towns and talked to the girls, which were now a bit older, and they all told the researchers they just made up stories for fun. So everything the researcher found out by talking to the girls was completely useless because they just made it up just for fun. And there's a great quote by Rob Fitzpatrick, who wrote the book The Mom Test, that if you're just annoying about, people will eventually say that your idea is great, just so you go away. And yeah, if you're interested in idea extraction and all the kind of things that can go wrong when doing it, how to do it right, then I think The Mom Test is really the book to go. I have not finished it yet, but I finished the first few chapters and it's absolutely amazing. And I've not tried idea extraction myself so far, but I think the advice in the book is absolutely great. Just for the caveats I just mentioned, that you have to be careful how you treat what potential buyers say to you or potential customers are saying. So yeah. But yeah, my point here really is not to judge the different methods, because I certainly don't have enough experience to do this. So I just want to explain which methods are out there, and because I try to answer this question for myself, and now I have this beautiful organized list of different methods, and I have an arsenal of methods that I will use in the next months in order to find problems, and then we'll hopefully see which of them really do work in the real world, or at least for me, because of course I think it also really depends on what kind of person you are. Because if you're just a, I don't know, 80-year-old college student, then you will probably have a harder time doing idea extraction compared to when you're like a 40-year-old senior executive with 20 years experience in a field, because the older guy will have no problem calling contacts and finding, yeah, doing idea extraction, right? Well, there's one more ideation method, or ideation method category, if you want, that I haven't talked about, and this is also inorganic, but instead of bottom up, instead of starting with some specific problem of a specific person, we now start again with a field. So we're doing inorganic top-down ideation, and this is called idea safaris or sales safaris. And as with organic top-down ideation, so the idea is that we pick a field, let's say again machine learning, and now instead of immersing yourself in it, you start to observe it like a scientist would. So you for example, visit the different forums that exist for the field where all the practitioners are hanging out, and then you just go there every day for a few weeks and start observing what's happening and pay special attention to what the people complain about and what they find frustrating. And the idea is that this will give you, yeah, product ideas, because they are all, you know, if you're observing the field like a scientist, like a scientist would study an ant, eventually you will find problems that are probably worth solving. And people who are big fans of this approach are Amy Hoy and Alex Hillman, and they are also, yeah, they've both written books and they're even giving workshops on this kind of things. But I think yeah, the basic idea is pretty clear even without one of these resources. So just visit relevant forums, have a look at the conversations that are happening, what are people complaining about, what do they find frustrating, and try to come up with product ideas this way. Now that we have this arsenal of ideas, these few, four different ideation methods for finding problems worth solving, the logical next question is, of course, what exactly should I do, right? Because there are four methods and there's still analysis paralysis if you're not picking one. And of course, it's entirely up to you. So it's very dependent on what kind of person you are. If you like talking to people and have lots of contacts, then go ahead, do idea extraction. If you're a bit more introverted, maybe an idea safari could work better. If you're really young, then it can make a lot of sense to try organic top-down ideation. So try to live in the future and then build what's missing, because this takes a lot of time. Because to get to the edge of a new field, if you're just now deciding to enter a field like machine learning, well, it will take quite a time before you'll be able to get to the edge of it and then find the problems worth solving in the field. But if you're young, I think this is really a great approach. And in contrast, if you're a bit older, maybe these inorganic methods are more attractive because they are certainly faster. We're here talking about a few weeks and not about a few years before you'll be able to spot a few good problems. And what, for example, Patrick McKenzie recommends is that you should first try organic bottom-up ideation. So look at your own life, at your job, at all the jobs you had in the past, and there try to find problems and opportunities there. If this fails, try to get a job in the field, enter a new field, become a more interesting person by having more interesting hobbies. By if getting a job is not an option, you can still dabble in the field in your free time and build cool projects and learn about it until you really have a good grasp of it. And eventually you will spot problems in the field. And if this is not an option, for example, if you're already a bit older and spending a year or two or whatever before you're able to build your business, to find your product idea, sounds not like a good idea, then and there are, you should move on to the inorganic methods. You should try to talk to people and figure out their problems. And if this is not an option or fails for whatever reason, then you can try inorganic top-down ideation, where you pick a new field and then observe it from the outside until you find promising problems. So you read about the field, you go to the forums, to the Slack channels, and observe the conversations there until you have a good grasp of the problems that exist in the field. And maybe if you're not able to find a promising problem in that field, you can still move on to the next, and you will not be wasting years of your life, but maybe just a few weeks before you have a solid grasp of the problem landscape in the field. And yeah, but of course, this is just one recommendation I came across from Patrick McKenzie that I personally like, but it's of course entirely up to you. There are these, let's say, four really distinct methods, and it's a rich menu. You can pick whatever you want, and I think all of them have certain benefits. All of them can, of course, work and have led to great product ideas. So there are really ideas and there are really examples for each method where it worked nicely. Of course, create your own edge. Peter Levels built Nomadless because he is a digital nomad, and finding the next location to go was something he always had a problem figuring out. So he built a tool to make it easier for himself. And Paul Graham has lots of examples for how living in the future and then building what's missing worked, like different YC companies like Uber or whatever. So if you have this vision that the sharing economy will be big and then you immerse yourself in it, and yeah, maybe then you end up with an idea like Uber or Airbnb. Idea extraction is what Nathan Barry recommends, for example, and Dane Maxwell and Nathan Barry used it, for example, to build ConvertKit. And ConvertKit is a super successful bootstrapped email service making millions of dollars each year. And also I'm certain I have not looked into it, but I'm certain Amy Hoy and Alex Hillman have lots of examples for companies that were built by a sales safari. So ideally, and this is what I'm personally planning to do, I will try all of them at least once. And yeah, because great ideas can come from everywhere. And I think even more important than the idea you're starting with, the problem you want to solve initially, is that you have a solid system to put it through, what Tyler Drinkers calls the meat grinder. So you have a long list of ideas, the problems you want to solve, and then the solutions, which turn into ideas, product ideas, and you have a long list of them. And the key then really is to go through this list and evaluate for each of these, for these ideas, how promising is it? Am I the right person to solve it? Can I solve it? How many people want it solved? So you give it a ranking, then you can already discard some of the ideas because they are not very promising. And the best ideas, then you can try to validate. And there are also different methods to validate, and I've also done some research on this topic and will run several experiments myself, but this is maybe a topic for another day. So let's stick with the ideation phase for today and leave the meat grinder, the evaluation and the validation for another day. And yeah, I've talked about a lot about theory now. It's all been very theoretical, and because this is what I did, right? I tried to grasp a theory, what theoretical methods exist, which which ways to think about product ideation, which thinking schools, if you want, exist. And yeah, I think I have a relatively solid grasp of it now, but too much theory is unhealthy, right? You have to take action, you have to actually do stuff, run your own experiments, get experience with different methods. And this is why I not just ended up with this essay about my grand unified theory of product ideation, but I also built a little tool, because one thing that's certainly true for myself is that I read about all these cool tricks and methods and strategies to find product ideas, but I read it somewhere, maybe I saved it somewhere, and I tried it maybe once and I totally forgot about it, right? And I think this happens to all of us, and even the coolest idea is quickly forgotten, and it's really hard to find a way to do this kind of thing regularly, to internalize it, really a new way of thinking. And I think it's really crucial to, at least for me, to develop this kind of entrepreneurial mindset where I'm constantly looking out for problems and opportunities. And because this is something I'm not very good at the moment, and I want to get better. And I did all the research and I understand things theoretically, but I've certainly not internalized it. And it's something there's a lot of implicit knowledge that you can only really grasp through experimentation, through practice. This is why I built a little tool that I call the Product Idea Prompt Generator. The name is a bit awkward, but it describes what it is perfectly. And I try to pick every method I found on product ideation, really every method, even the stupid ones, and I reformulated it in terms of a prompt. So because, you know, you have these statements, live in the future, then build what's missing, scratch your own itch, but it's not very actionable. And I try to turn it into something actionable. So I reformulate it in terms of a list of prompts. So just an example, one of the prompts, if you had total control, what would the world look like in 100 years? What could you create to bring your vision closer to reality? So, and I've also even more actionable prompts, because there are really cool ideation methods. For example, one of the other prompts is, which gig listed in the Fiverr category coaching could you automate and then sell as a web app? Right? And then I have a link that directly brings you to the coaching category at Fiverr, and you can look at it and look for problems and opportunities there. And the tool is basically just thousands of these kinds of prompts, which I created through a little Python script. And there are thousands because things like the Fiverr category get replaced dynamically, so there's a variable, and it's not the tool does not ask you all the time to look at the coaching category, but also at the marketing category, at the drawing category, and whatever else there is. And there are lots of categories, so every time you're looking at the prompt generator, you're confronted with new prompts. So some of the prompts will be repeated, of course, but I don't think this is a problem, because at different days you will be able to think about things differently, and can be really helpful to do a thinking exercise like the one I just mentioned. If you had total control, what would the world look like in 1,000 years? Several times, not just once, because this is, after all, what I really wanted to do, because it's the only way how I think I will be able to internalize this kind of thinking. And I've mentioned earlier in an earlier episode that one of the things I want to do during my Bootstrap MBA experiment is write down 5 product ideas each day. And I've tried it and it went okay. I have a long list of ideas, but it was always a bit frustrating, because each morning I was looking at this blank piece of paper and tried to force myself into writing stuff down. And oftentimes, I just wrote down silly stuff because there was nothing else that came to my mind. A blank piece of paper is not a great starting point for creativity, I think. And this is how I ended up with product idea prompt generator, because it's just, yeah, it just gets my creative juices flowing. So it's super easy to write down 5 ideas each day by using it. And this is what I do now for several, even weeks now. Every morning I start the product idea prompt generator. I read the prompts. I do what it tells me, like, for example, looking at a Fiverr category, looking at a Zapier flow, and all different kinds of things. And then I try to come up with corresponding product ideas, and I write them down in my long list. And I personally, at least, find it really useful. And I then decided that I probably should make it public, because lots of other people will have the problem too. And yesterday I launched it on Product Hunt, for example, on Hacker News, on Joe Hacker News. And it went quite well. So so the stats were really similar to my last launch, to my last launch, Maker Reads. I got around, I think now it's 300 upvotes on Product Hunt, like 80 upvotes on Hacker News, but more importantly, also 40 new Twitter followers resulted from their launch. And I had the idea that maybe some people don't like visiting the prompt generator, which, by the way, is available at prompts.productideas.co each morning. So I also created a newsletter you can sign up for, where I will regularly send you these kind of prompts together with other opportunities, with opportunities I've spotted and a thought on product ideation. And it's called the Product Ideas newsletter. It's available if you want to sign up at productideas.substack.com. It's free, and it's just for an access. I basically just write it for myself to practice my writing, because I'm really bad at short form writing, and the newsletter is really short. And this is, I would just want to practice writing about product ideas, and writing about product ideas really helps to solidify my own thinking. And this is why I decided to create this newsletter, which I will send out whenever I have an idea. So there's no fixed schedule, but still I'll hope to publish at least one edition each week. And somewhat surprisingly, already 80 people signed up for it through the launch on Product Hunt, which is really cool and something I did not expect. I expected a bit more upvotes, to be honest, because I think the idea is really cool and it's much better than my last idea, than the Maker Reads idea. But still, it's of course cool that people recognized it. It didn't get lost in the void, right? Because it also happens to people who work on something for a month and then they launch it and get like 10 upvotes, nobody cares, and it's super frustrating. And this didn't happen, of course. And on the other hand, I really don't care that much about these kind of stats, because first and foremost, I built the tool for myself. And I then really launched it just because I thought other people might find it useful, and I don't earn any money with it. It's totally free. So it's all going well. And I have also no idea how many people actually use the tool or visit the site or whatever, because I don't track it. I think it's a somewhat meaningless metric. I want to focus on things that are really important to me, and just site visitors is not important for me, because I think the only people who should care about this stat, about the number of site visitors, is people who are selling ads, because in this case, eyeballs are important, but for everything else, I don't think it matters. And far more important for me is, for example, how many people subscribe to my personal email list or to me on Twitter, who follow me on Twitter, because these are really people who not just visit my site, but people who say, I'm interested in what you're doing. I want to hear more from you. And this is really the feedback, the kind of the metric I'm looking at, that because it's valuable to me. And like, if there are 5,000 people to my site, I really don't care whether it's 5,000 or 50, because if it's the right kind of people, it's 50 awesome people who will then send me a message and feedback and want to discuss stuff with me. It's so much more important than 5,000 people that really don't care about me. And yeah, this was the launch. I didn't do anything special. I just announced it on Twitter, and Indie Hackers posted, and also in the Telegram group MakerLog. And a fun thing that happened as a result of or associated with the launch is that I got my first real Hacker News comment. So, you know, Hacker News is famous for snarky comments, like when Dropbox was announced on Hacker News, people just wrote, "Huh, I could easily do it myself on a weekend, and now it's a $1 billion company." And I posted, I not just posted the product prompt generator, product idea prompt generator on Hacker News, but also the Grand Unified Theory of Product Ideation post. And I roughly got the same number of upvotes, around 80. And one person wrote as a comment to the article, has the author built anything substantial themselves? This might go against Hacker News' wisdom to appeal to authority, but I'm highly skeptical of any product ideation advice from someone that haven't built anything significant themselves. And yeah, it's kind of funny advice, because I'm not claiming any originality in the essay. It's totally obvious. So I'm not the inventor of any of the methods I'm discussing. I cite all the people. So it's all the advice is from people who really know what they're talking about, because each of them has built successful businesses. And so the comment was a bit funny, and I also answered to it. So I wrote that I'm the author, and I can clearly say, no, I haven't built anything substantial. So let's see. So not yet. Time will tell if the methods described are solid, because I will try them and we will see what my results are. But yeah, even if I fail, if I will not be successful by using them, I still think they are solid, because yeah, just one data point from me will not tell you anything. Now, I think this is almost everything I wanted to talk about. One more thing is that I joined a private community because I just wanted to test it. So, you know, there are these public communities like Indie Hackers, Product Hunt, and Hacker News, whatever. And I personally like the idea of a more private community, because no one feels comfortable standing on the marketplace and just screaming their opinions for the whole world to hear, right? This is, at least for a person like me, really uncomfortable. And this is why I decided to join a private community. It's called IndieStack. And I don't have anything to report yet, so I just joined. And I will definitely talk more about my experience with a private community in another episode. But just as a mention, that this is something I'm experimenting with, because something I definitely need to get better at is talking to people in a similar situation, learning from them, because I usually totally get immersed in my projects. I like coding, I like writing, but there's so much to be learned from more experienced people or people at the same level who are struggling with similar problems. And I'm certainly not doing enough in that direction. And hopefully that will change. I have several ideas how to change it, but I'm not sure how it will work out, because I tend to fall back into my little rabbit holes all the time. And yeah, let's see. I will definitely report back if it's worth it, if it works. And maybe the last thing I want to mention is that, yeah, I have to admit that I spent another month building a product, building a project and not a product. And this is not really what I wanted to do, right? Because I wanted to learn how to build businesses, how to launch products and not projects. So a product is a project you can charge money for. And so far, everything I've built was free. And my thinking is and was that this makes at least some sense if you're a beginner, because it's easier to get some feedback and you can make lots of mistakes and people don't care because they don't pay any money for it. For example, this is my prompt generator. If there are lots of typos, if the site crashes, whatever, no one cares because it's just a free, neat little tool. But I really think that I should graduate, and this is what I hopefully will do next. So I now want to graduate from project to product. I really want to build something that people hopefully will be happy, pay money for, and I will try to keep it simple, because one step at a time, right? I also didn't start by building some super complicated SaaS app, whatever. What I did so far was really simple, single purpose tools, as I called it. And the next thing I want to do will again hopefully be something quite simple, at least in terms of technical sophistication. But I want to launch it as a product and not as a project. And I have two ideas currently I'm working on, and I'm working on them simultaneously because I'm not sure how useful they really are. And as with a product idea prompt generator, they are solving problems I'm having myself, and thus I'm testing some myself, and I want to test them for a few weeks at least to find out if they are really useful, if this is something I want to spend my time on, and how often it crashes, how much maintenance these kind of projects need. And yeah, I'm currently collecting these kind of data points for my trust by using it myself. But hopefully until the next episode, I will have launched at least one of them. And at the same time, I've also built two further projects that I haven't launched yet, which are also related to the product idea rabbit hole. And I'm not sure what I will do with it, but maybe I'll just do some like micro launch in between, just to get some publicity, to get some eyeballs onto my stuff, because this kind of side project marketing, I think, is super effective. And even if I'm not making any money from a little project I built over the weekend, it's still a great way to make people aware of my projects, of my whole experiment, and a great way to connect with like-minded people, because yeah, you need to put yourself out there if you want to get noticed. And while my goal certainly is not to be any kind of famous, I really like to connect with people in the field, and it's so much easier if you actually have stuff, if people reach out to you because you have built something cool. And I will definitely not only focus on products in the future, I will still put out a few little projects that I personally just find useful, and will then make them publicly available for free. If others use them, great. If not, I don't care. And but still, you really, 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 what I need to do is build a product. They will get some experience for charging money, because it's a lot more complicated, right? Because if you think about my last project, product AI prompt generator, I could have made it a pay tool, right? It's easily possible. I'm not sure if people would pay money for, but in principle, it's a neat little tool that solves the problem people are having. So training your idea muscle is something that a lot of people want to do, but they are not able to do it regularly because it's really hard. Because staring at a blank piece of paper is not fun, and it's frustrating. And so having a little help is great. And the help I curated is really solid, because each prompt is based on a solid strategy by a famous startup thinker. And it's really a lot of fun to use, and I personally find it really useful. So it solved a problem for myself, and therefore I think also solves a problem other people have. But I didn't make it a paid tool, because there's a lot of overhead involved. So you have to figure out how do you charge? Do you use Stripe, or do you use Gumroad? How do you handle it? Because then you need some kind of authentication system, because you need to distinguish between people who paid for the tool and people who didn't. And then do you create like a trial version or a freemium model? I don't know. there are all these kind of issues I really haven't thought about and have no experience with. And this is why, yeah, this is the what I hopefully will learn next. So how to charge money for stuff, and maybe I will even earn my first $5 or so. That would be amazing. So I'm not hoping to earn a lot of money, but really just to validate that I'm in principle able to build something that people are willing to pay money for would be amazing. And if that works, I hope that I will be confident enough to tackle more ambitious problems, because I mentioned this long list of problems and product ideas that I collected. And I think there are a few really cool ones, but I haven't tackled them so far because they are a bit ambitious and I feel I need a bit more experience with different stuff. And hopefully I will do that afterwards. And then the final thing I want to focus on and learn more about, because I spent the first months focusing on learning how to develop stuff and learning Rails. And then I learned a bit of Tailwind and Vue.js, and I'm also learned a little bit Python. And then, as I mentioned, the last month was spent thinking about reading about product ideation, and the missing cornerstone of my bootstrap MBA experiment is marketing. And I really have no clue what I'm doing in terms of marketing. And there's a lot I have to learn. And hopefully, once I have my first real product, this will be the rabbit hole I will be focusing in. And then again, as I did with product ideation, I will write about it. I will talk about it on the podcast and maybe even release one or two little tools that other people might find useful who are independent founders who want to do cheap marketing. And yeah, that's basically all. So what I did during the last months, what I'm planning to do next, and really hoping to keep myself accountable. And see you next time. Bye-bye.